Our sermon today will be presented by the Green Sanctuary Committee, Dennis Strain, Alan Windel, Anais Sales, Gail Mershon, Judy Morgan, and Carolyn Scott.
Good morning.
Good morning.
This is a service about the Earth. Our planet is a wonder. It was formed over 4.5 billion years ago from the debris of exploding stars. Shortly after it was formed, there was a collision with another planet, and the debris from that collision formed our moon, a moon large enough that it could affect the rotation of the Earth and the wobbling of the Earth. Now, some scientists think that collision was responsible for the chemical mix that allowed life to form. But it's very clear that moon is responsible for keeping slowing the wobble of the planet, keeping the temperature steady so that life could develop, slowing the days so that life would have longer time in the sun so that it could develop. Life itself is a wonder, from the tiniest organisms that developed into the complexity that we see today. 2 billion years ago, a remarkable event occurred when bacteria learned to convert carbon dioxide into oxygen, and that's responsible for the air that we breathe today. There have been 5 major catastrophes to life on Earth, but each time life came back, filling every nook, every cranny, filling the sea, filling the air with life again. The most recent catastrophe was 65 million years ago. That's when a 10-mile-wide asteroid fell into the Yucatan Peninsula. And that brought an end to the reign of the dinosaurs, who had controlled the Earth for over 200 million years. It brought on the time of mammals, and that, of course, is our time. But when you think back on all these particular events, as serendipitous as they might seem, absent any one of them, life on this planet would be very different, and we ourselves probably would not be here at all. The planet right now is undergoing change, and we be confident that life will respond to that change, but the response of life may result in the extinction of many species, including our own. Whatever that process is, we know that as the climate changes, life will change as well.
Oh, what a wonderful world indeed. It would be lovely to have a service today that focused only on the grandeur of nature. The wonders that we could hold up and celebrate are limitless. But we believe that to do that only would be, in a way, dishonest. Because, as I'm sure you are well aware, we humans are changing the climates of the world that we evolved to inhabit, or as I sometimes prefer to say, that God created for us. And we are changing them in ways that, to say the least, are often not good for us, and are also not good for many of the other life forms with which we share this miraculous creation. There are many types of environmental damage that we are inflicting on the biosphere, but we believe that the gravest of these is what is now referred to as climate change. Until fairly recently, the term used was global warming, but that turned out to be too simplistic and too easily ridiculed, because while it is certainly true that the planet as a whole is warming, and almost certainly true that human activity is causing most or all of this warming, it's also true that while some places get warmer, wetter, more acidic, other places experience the opposite effects or no direct effect. So the climate change story at the local level is complex, and there are hundreds of scientists around the world who are dedicated to understanding it and helping us to decide what to do about it. But I want to step back from these details for a moment and look at a few basic facts. The slide plots the concentration of carbon dioxide, or CO2, in the atmosphere over the past 1,000 years. Carbon dioxide is what is known as a greenhouse gas, meaning that its presence in the atmosphere traps heat and warms the planet, which up to a point is a good thing. There are other gases, such as methane and nitrous oxide, that do this, but we will just look at carbon dioxide. As you can see, with the start of the industrial age in the 18th century, it started to go up. And in this century, it has gone up dramatically. Today, we are at 394. That's 394 parts per million. So where is all this extra carbon dioxide coming from? I'll just quickly list the top sources. First, power generation. So think of the electricity that powers so much of our lives. Second, what's generally lumped together as industrial processes. So think of all the stuff that we make in our factories. Third would be transportation. There, think of driving around in our cars and trucks and shipping products around the world. And fourth, not everyone is aware that agriculture is a very significant contributor, especially the livestock sector of agriculture. And there are a few others, including heating our buildings. So we are now at 394 and rising. That is a very inconvenient number, and you might notice it is included in the title of this sermon. In fact, it is more than inconvenient enough to cause very significant and often harmful climate changes around the world. For example, we are undoubtedly seeing an increase in drastic weather events, drought, flooding, melting glaciers, and melting polar ice. And that's just the short list. The EPA, Environmental Protection Agency, tracks about 20 leading indicators. There are two aspects of climate change that are especially troubling. The first is that there is almost no prospect of a near-term solution. I'm afraid it's just going to get worse. The second is that mainstream climate science is telling us that in the next few decades, we may reach an instability point that will make what's been happening so far seem quite mild by comparison. The younger you are, the more concerned you should be about that frightening prospect. I will probably not live to see how this plays out, but my children and their children probably will. So, why aren't we doing something drastic about this huge threat to our current and future well-being? The simple, short answer is that because doing so requires us to do just about the hardest thing imaginable, which is to drastically reduce our combustion of fossil fuel or find a cleaner way to burn it. And burning fossil fuel is at the very core of our economy. There are possible technical solutions, but they are all very expensive, unproven at large scale, or both. And this leads to two, I'll say, non-technical or political problems that make this really hard problem even more difficult. The first is the conflict between the advanced industrial economies of which we are a part and the developing world. They want to get as rich as we are by doing what we did, which is to burn vast, vast amounts of cheap coal, oil, and gas. The second really hard political thing is that the issue has become politicized here in the U.S. in an extremely unhealthy way. There are very influential people with large followings who say that climate change science is just another liberal plot to destroy America. So there you have it. The news, my friends, is not good. Right now, we are in a state of global paralysis or near paralysis with respect to this problem. But this is a religious service, so we are not going to leave you with just that. Please join me in singing hymn 298, after which we will offer you two types of UU spiritual response to this crisis.
The past, the present, and the future walked into a bar. It was tense. A friend shared this joke on Facebook, and I've tinkered with it for today's service. The past, the present, and the future meet up in a UU church to discuss climate change. They talk amongst themselves for a while, a long while. The past is sure it holds the answer. The future is equally confident of the way forward. The present is satisfied with things the way they are. They come this close to forming a committee. But in the end, after reaching a friendly impasse, the past, the present, and the future walk into a bar. Thank you, Alan, for sharing truthful news about climate change. The bad news is that at 390 parts per million and climbing, climate change is upon us. The good news is that we have a narrow window of time in which to engage the spiritual practice of being environmental stewards. First, we acknowledge the when and how this damage to our atmosphere. This is the spiritual practice of acknowledging the past. We appreciate that we have the spiritual maturity to accept the truth of where we are in relationship to our environment today. This is the spiritual practice of being present to what is. We mindfully activate our intention to preserve our environment in every way possible from this day forward, knowing full well that we are already beyond the tipping point. This is the spiritual practice of surrendering to our mortality and the knowledge of how we have and are contributing to the demise of our species. Each day we can celebrate the Earth's majesty through the lens of living in voluntary simplicity, through the practice of strict recycling, by eating more vegetables than meat, by eating locally grown food, hopefully organic, by caring for a vegetable garden, by giving up our lawns in favor of a messy, raucous cottage garden, by choosing not to buy bottled water unless we are in a crisis situation. We can continue to swap out our light bulbs, mind the tap, walk, and carpool. Every one of these acts is an act of devotion and the profound spiritual practice of environmental stewardship cloaked in the mundane. Each of these acts anchors us in the reality that our Earth is mortal, fragile, precious, and one of a kind, with or without us inhabiting it. When you are gathered in this fortress of faith, or when you are living out your ethical promise outside these walls in relationship with the beloved community, rejoice. You have been held in the Earth's gentle abundance. Celebrate having tasted honey, wine, and good bread designed by nature. Celebrate the earth giving us every good thing to eat so that we can experience health and strength. Celebrate having tasted clear water safe enough to drink. Celebrate breathing the air every tree gives us as a gift. Joyfully take up the spiritual practice of protecting our earth. Respect every habitat of every life form she has created. Think of every child you know and love. Consider the babies on their way. Pray for a welcoming future on Earth in which they live long and prosper, knowing they too are an inseparable part of the interdependent web of all life, which we did not create, but which we can destroy. As we celebrate Earth Day, take heart. To not feel overwhelmed by what amounts to a fatal diagnosis for our species and many, many others. For this diagnosis brings with it the incredible gift of choosing whether we go with grace or whether we go burdened by grief, guilt, and regret for leaving things undone that we have the power to do. Have you ever seen a more beautiful spring? If you knew this was to be the last spring of your life, wouldn't it have been perfect? Wouldn't you want to witness every glorious moment of it? And wouldn't its soft beauty open your heart to being radically alive?
Well, it would be lovely to stay in this sacred space a while. Thank you, Anais, for creating a container of beautiful images and poetry about our beloved planet, and reminders of who we are as spiritual, animal, and thinking beings capable of great work. I invite you all to hold this space within you while we explore briefly some practical ideas about what we can and must do. I want to acknowledge Judy Morgan's participation in preparing this part of the service. Thank you, Judy. The urgency of climate change requires strong, effective action. So far, the U.S. Congress has failed to even introduce effective climate legislation. Without strong legislation in the U.S., global cooperation is unlikely. If the U.S. does not take effective action soon here in the U.S., we face an unacceptable risk of locking in irreparable damage to our climate and ecosystems, damage that could potentially last thousands of years. The failure of Congress to act requires that we, the people, must lead. In recent years, anti-climate change forces, often funded by the oil and gas industries, have effectively used news media outlets, including television, radio, and letters to the editor, to ridicule and dismiss climate change. At the same time, the oil and gas industries have spent millions keeping pressure on Congress to do nothing on climate change. As a result, many legislators and a significant percentage of the public believe that there is no climate crisis. If we want to see movement in addressing climate change, we need to be similarly organized. It is a matter of numbers. If legislators receive 3 letters supporting a climate change initiative, they don't pay attention. If they get 300 letters, they sit up and take notice. If they receive 3,000 letters, they are moved to action. Marshall Saunders, founder of Citizen Climate Lobby, said the following about why he felt the need to found a national organization committed to a political approach to climate change. This is his quote. "I realized that ordinary people like me would have to organize, educate ourselves, give up our hopelessness and powerlessness, and gain the skills to be effective with our government." I'd like to read that again. "Ordinary people like me and you would have to organize, educate ourselves, give up our hopelessness and powerlessness, and gain the skills to be effective with our government." Change will happen if enough of us join with others. We need each other for inspiration, ideas, building on each other's energies, and to have fun while working hard. Change will happen if we contact our legislators. Change will happen if we talk to people everywhere about climate change. Please be sure to take home your order of service today. The insert contains some specific actions you can choose and resources to help in your efforts for our planet. Please also stop by the Green Sanctuary table after service to get a list of organizations working to save our air, our water, our planet. We invite and encourage you to join the Green Sanctuary Committee at USG. We will host trainings for volunteers to learn to speak powerfully to our elected officials. We will learn to write effective letters to the media while launching letter-writing campaigns. We will connect to a local chapter of Citizens Climate Lobby for group empowerment, during monthly national conference calls with guest speakers. And yes, we will have fun while we work hard together. By committing to taking leadership and working to halt climate change, we are counteracting the forces of climate deniers, strengthening our democracy, standing for our grandchildren and their grandchildren's right to a healthy ecosystem, and living our seventh principle in word, deed, and heart. Let us take a minute, a few moments, to silently reflect on our short journey together today. Let us look inside to see what we are moved to do in response to this great crisis. Find one thing you will absolutely commit to do in 2012, whether it's a lifestyle change, political action, or something else. Your order of insert contains some ideas. In a few moments, I will ask you to share your commitment with someone. Now I'm going to ask you to please stand as you are able and turn to someone near you, doesn't have to be the person you came with, and tell them in a sentence about your commitment. Then listen to their promise to themselves and to the earth. Speaking it out loud to one person and bearing witness to another's promise can create lasting and powerful intentions for the work ahead. Please stand. And go ahead.